This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app and streaming live on YouTube. Hello! At the Team 980. Anthony, I have no idea. We just took over me. I don't know. What? Why did I do that? Why did I go full Miss Doubtfire?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Should stop talking. We're just going to get to the mailbag as soon as possible. So here's the deal. We've been doing mailbags early podcasts every single week, either Monday or Tuesday. There's a holiday this week, so we did it today. Anthony, you all right over there? Why are you flexing?
I was really stretching. My bad.
Oh, I just looked up and I was like, why is Anthony flexing? Get this goober off of camera. Back to the one shot. The point is, we are going to do some mock draft adjacent stuff once a week. We're going to do some more current incumbent commander stuff via mailbag once a week. And today we recorded a mailbag. And I thought these questions that we got about the commander's defensive line were really interesting. And so we wanted to share this part of the mailbag with you here on the radio. We got another question about Jaden Daniels and some on the offensive line. You'll have to check out the full episode to take command for that. Without further ado, here's the defensive line portion of the mailbag. Wrapping up this edition of Take Command, Craig Hoffman here, Logan Paulson there, and we're going to talk more about the line of scrimmage, but this time on the defensive side of it. We got a John Allen, Daron Payne question in a few, Logan, but starting off with Johnny Newton and Brian, who we just heard from on the offensive line side, also had a part two, and since both of his questions are good, we're going to take them. I'm not panicking or anything, but even as Johnny Newton likely will benefit from a healthy offseason, he is a bit small. Would he maybe make a better edge player than an interior player? With his quickness and relentlessness, it seems like he'd be pretty dangerous there, even if he might not be the speediest at running the hoop, or is that dumb? I would just start with this on a blanket level. If you want someone to switch positions at the professional level, your idea probably is not baked all the way through. And I don't know why we get a million of these. And I'm saying this, I'm trying to say this both nicely and because Brian had the self-awareness to be like, is this dumb? And I, like for some sliding over one position on the defensive line for a guy who's got a ton of quickness, et cetera, like we'll talk about it. This is not the worst one that I've gotten, but like you see, you know, Luke McCaffrey should switch to running back. I'm like, why? Cause his last name's McCaffrey. You know, this guy should switch from corner to safety. This guy should switch from safety to corner. And it's like, if they have made it all the way to the professionals, chances are they're probably in their best position. Some guys can move. It's not totally impossible, depending on what the move is. But generally speaking, the should this guy switch positions, the answer is no. I tend to think that for Johnny Newton, the answer is going to be no, in part because of that size. If you think of the best edge players, they are big, long, athletic, types. Like, you want to talk about some basketball players, like Miles Garrett, you know, as the best edge, Micah Parsons, like those guys could go play basketball. And in fact, both those two in particular have played in the NBA celebrity game and shown themselves decently well, dunking on people, etc. So from a length standpoint, that what you need to manipulate the space out on the edge, I do not think that is where Johnny Newton is going to be best, because he's a shorter, stockier guy. That quickness that he has, the explosiveness that he has, is probably more useful on the interior. Logan, your thoughts more than welcome here on Newton and kind of where he stands and his best usage moving forward.
Yeah, I kind of see it the same way. And again, like, so I think this is an interesting conversation about switching positions just in general. Like, obviously, you know, taking Luke McCaffrey and putting him at a running back, like everyone says, oh, you just hand him the ball and everything's great. But there's a protection element, there's a physicality element. And like, I think about Niles Paul switching from receiver to tight end. And I've worked with a lot of tight receivers who are switching to tight end in another business that I work on, right? And one of the things is like, yeah, like you're a great athlete, you can run routes, but there's a physical component to this position that in your last position you were lacking, right? You just weren't able to accommodate. And so I will say the one thing about Johnny moving from defensive tackle to potentially defensive end or like an edge position is that the physicality is approximately the same. So like one of the hardest things in terms of the transition, he's already kind of got that in the bag. Now, I think the thing that you alluded to is like the thing that makes it problematic, right? Is that like there's a reason he's playing defensive tackle, right? He's got 32 3/8-inch arms, which is not what you want to see from an elite edge, right? He's got a good get off, but not a great get off. Like, there's a different type of get off from a defensive tackle to a defensive end. So on first and second down, do I think it's reasonable that he plays like the big end? I think that's entirely reasonable, right? Because he's going to be head up over a tight end. He's going to work his get off. He's going to work hands. He's going to violently shed. And I think that would be totally fine for him.
Right. If they want that package where Deron played edge, turn into Johnny at some point in the next couple of years, he could do that just fine.
I think that's totally fine, right? But again, like in terms of rushing the passer from that position, I think people sleep on the amount of stride length required to really affect an elite tackle, right? Like you just have to cover ground in a different way. So like I've coached defensive tackles as a pass rusher, I've coached defensive ends. I'll tell you, it feels different coming off the line of scrimmage, right? Their ability to kind of be explosive off those first two steps and really threaten and challenge that outside shoulder of the tackle, it's a different ball of wax. Now, is it good to throw different body types at tackles? Yeah, because I think there's a reason that, you know, sometimes you put a defensive tackle out there, they're not used to kind of dealing with that power and that strength. So do I think there's situational opportunities for that? But in terms of long-term, what's best for Johnny Newton, I don't think this would be best for him, right? And I do think that, like, one of the things about Johnny is that he was banged up all offseason, banged up for a big chunk of the season, coming into the season with the foot, right? So he didn't really have an opportunity to, like, develop. I do think when you look at the league, right, there, if you have elite quickness, you can be devastating on the interior. You can absolutely be devastating. And so if he can kind of figure out some tells, understand situationally, like when he can be super aggressive, again, that's part of it, right? I think the athlete is fine. I think the measurables for defensive tackle are fine. I think the size is even fine. But you got to know when you got to gamble a little bit, right? When you're a quick, explosive defensive tackle. Like the bigger guys, yeah, they don't need to gamble as much. They're big. They can use their hands, throw people down. Like Chris Jones, like he's gambling a little bit, but he's long, he's strong, he can do everything you need him to do. Johnny's got to be a little bit more aggressive gambling, kind of taking his opportunities. And I think as you play more professional football, you can do that, right? So like I get used to the snap count, I get used to the checks, I get used to the calls of the offensive line. Like when you're at the line of scrimmage, sometimes you can hear it on the TV copy if you listen closely. They'll be like, hey, doom, 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 doom. That's a duo. That's a call that every team uses for duo or a gap scheme run, right? So if I'm Johnny and I'm playing three technique and they're calling doom, I know that I can split this double team right now. I can widen. And you see Payne do it sometimes. He'll hear the call. He'll widen out. He'll split the gap. I think that's something that'll just make him more effective. Is he ever going to be a great run-stopping player? Probably not. Like, that's just not in his DNA. But can he be disruptive? Absolutely. And I think that's going to get better as he plays more NFL football.
And if you think of how this defense is kind of designed, I mean, look, would they love to be stout against the run? Yes. But they made choices in terms of personnel and style of play that I think a disruptor is more of what they want. Like, they're willing to give up the 6-7 yards, even the 12-yard run. And then on the very next play, you try to run it again, and now you're in 2nd and 14 because Johnny Newton, after getting pushed out of the way on the first run, splits a double team and makes a TFL on the second one. Right. Like, that's how they're designed to get stops. Can we get in bad down and distance for an offense and then make a play because we can now dial up our blitz package, or we can, you know, jump routes, or we can do whatever we need to do to generate the turnovers, or, you know, create the variance in the game that we want. And so I think that's a choice. I do think that finding the right pairing for someone like Johnny is really important. And I think that's something that Dan ultimately never did in Dallas. And obviously that Green Bay game is going to live in Cowboys infamy forever in the playoffs. And obviously the way the Eagles ran on Washington in the NFC Championship game is something that will live in Washington infamy forever, added to the many games of infamy that Saquon Barkley created in 2024. But at the end of the day, like, Jerzon's, I think the biggest thing here that Brian mentions is, I know he has a healthy offseason, and that should matter. Like, we shouldn't blow past that. This is a guy that missed the entire offseason and then missed the entirety of training camp for his second surgery. So his ability to just be healthy going into an offseason will completely change, or should, I should say, completely change who he is as a player in 2025, because he will have a year of experience. He'll be able to go through the offseason program. He'll be able to go through the offseason weight program. And participate in OTAs and the whole thing. So I just think it's a totally different season for Johnny Newton. And that's exciting in a lot of ways.
No, I kind of see it the same way. And again, like, with, you know, we're talking about Jaden Daniels having a sophomore slump. Like, I think a lot of people overestimate, again, because of what Jaden Daniels did. And when you see a good rookie, like, think about, like, Marvin Harrison Jr. or Roma Dunze, these guys that were generational, infallible project, like, prospects, and they struggled this year, right? I think that there's a steep learning curve. All the stuff you get away with, and I'll tell you firsthand, like, it's steep. Like, all the stuff you get away with in college, oh, I'm a little late in the snap count, oh, I'm a little loose in my hands, like, no chance, bro. Like, you got to tighten that stuff up. And so that's what we talked about at the top with Jaden. Is like, as long as you keep sharpening the sword, you can become a dangerous player in the NFL, right? And I think, like, hopefully Johnny will take this time where he's healthy. He's not prepping for the combine. He's not dealing with a broken foot this whole offseason, right? And get it right. And I think, like, that's ultimately what you're banking on. Is he, when you watch him on film, he is a commander. Like, when you watch his college film from Iowa, right? He's Illinois. He's physical. He's aggressive. He runs to the football, and he finishes every play. And so, if that gives you a really solid floor to a player, and now you just got to figure out, like, that technical, what do I need to do? What do I need to do? Go from being a good college player to a solid NFL player, and hand placement, get off, understanding situation, all of those things kind of roll into one. And I also think about this, man, like, he did not have time to own the defense. Like, he just didn't. No. Defensive tackles, like, relatively straightforward, but, like, there's shading to this that is lost when you lose training camp reps. And I think that's also important.
Well, and he also went from missing training camp reps to starting because John got hurt. Right. Like, the ramp was like, hey, guess what? We just steepened your ramp by about 60 degrees here. But you went from, like, a nice, easy hint to we're going straight up. Yeah. Real quick, as you were talking there, a story that you've told before on the pod, probably early days. So we have thousands upon thousands of new listeners at this point. Hey, everybody. There's a story you told about you and Cooley watching film and you getting like the snap count and your reaction time to illustrate, like, those nuances and how much that little stuff matters. Can you retell that story real quick?
Yeah. So this is one of my favorite stories, and it's one that I share with all of my clients, basically. And so one of the things that, you know, like, when I'm in the league, right, I was talking to Cooley, and he's like, man, you're not getting off on the ball. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, it's, you know, white 80, white, he said, hut. I go when he says, said hut. And he goes, like, come here, check this out. And so we go into the film room, and he goes, play, pause, play, pause, play, pause. And the whole offensive line is leaving, and I'm still in my stance. I was like, that's crazy. He's like, go talk to Rybak, who was the center at the time. Go talk to Will Montgomery. Find out when they're actually snapping it. So they go talk to Rybak, and Rybak actually was snapping it on the S of set. So, like, white 80, set. And I was going on hut. So I was, like, a full beat behind everybody else in the run game. And so that was something that, like, I thought about, and I was like, that's something that I have control over, I can own. But that I had gone through all of the offseason, and we were in training camp at that point, and no one had said anything to me about it. because it was such a subtle thing. And to Cooley's credit, like, he was so locked in and he could see it. So he was like, dude, why are you so late off the ball? And no one would say anything. No one, like, it didn't come up. But those are the types of details and the type of margin for error that you're negotiating there at the NFL level. Like, it's something in college I never even thought twice about. It never came up. I could be laid off the ball. I could still cut a guy out. I could be laid off the ball and still get a man reach. But when those dudes are better and they've got that step, you're putting yourself behind the eight ball. And so, again, that's a subtle thing. That's like, you know, tenths of, not even hundredths of a second. But that hundredths of a second, I will say, probably saved my career that year because it allowed me to be an effective player and understand, again, it was illuminating because it showed me the margin for error. There's no slack in the rope in the NFL game, right? Everybody's locked in. Linebackers know what you're doing. Like watching London Fletcher, when you get to the line of scrimmage versus London Fletcher in practice and he's going, hey, it's run to the left, you better believe you're not laid off the ball because he's normally right, right? Luke Kuechly, him calling plays out at the line of scrimmage, like I got to be on my horse on this double team to make sure that I can get to where I got to go. And if I'm a fraction of a second late, I'm in trouble. And so I think that's kind of what you're seeing here with Johnny. He lost all of that developmental time to kind of take the slack out of his game. And I think, again, he's a guy that I'm betting on because of how he works and how he preps. And just watching him in college, like even the this is not a strength conditioning podcast, but
might have one next week.
Yeah.
Hey.
The thing that gets me is like, think about the conditioning level. Like his conditioning level, he was not there. Like the whole reason you have this offseason is to make sure that you're ready for the regular season. You lost all of it. Like even like running and lifting, like you're not where you need to be. And so I'm very confident he'll figure it out and be able to play inside
for sure. And by the way, that wasn't just a reference to the fact that we have 2 years in a row done our crossover edition of my training podcast and this podcast that at the Indianapolis Scouting Combine, and we are hoping to do that next Thursday. So be on the lookout for that. All right, last question of the pod, Logan, goes to Jay from Bel Air. Jay says, the consensus seems to be to cut John Allen and keep Daron Payne. What's your thoughts on extending or reworking Allen's contract and trading Payne? Payne had a great season when he was up for a new contract, but he has not played up to that season since. I don't see him with the team beyond his current contract. Okay, so a couple of housekeeping things real quick before we get into whatever else we want to say on this from an analysis standpoint. Daron has 2 years left on his deal, his age 28 and 29 seasons. This year, he has a base salary of $19.5 million. Yeah. $19,560,000, if they want to say it the long way. Prorated signing bonus money. So this is money that the Commanders will have on the cap no matter what, $5.6 million. He's also got a workout bonus in there. He's got $9 million in guaranteed money. So no matter what this year, because that $9 million is guaranteed and he's got 5.6 in the prorated signing bonus, they would have 16.8 in dead money if they traded him. So if they trade him, they would save 9.3 if they trade him because the difference in the guaranteed money versus the rest of the base salary. But they still, if they trade him pre-June 1, they have a 16.8 dead cap number. Now, if they can do this trade this summer somehow, where they do a post-June 1 trade, then it becomes very worth it. They have 5.6 in dead money, which they will have no matter what the next 3 years because they've got the prorated signing bonus. And then they save $20.5 million. So trading Daron is not out of the equation. 16.8 is a lot of dead cap money. But I think that is worth pointing out before we even talk about what we think of John and Daron as players. Meanwhile, John, if you were to just straight up cut him pre-June 1 this year, you have $6 million in dead cap money from his prorated signing bonus, and you have $16.4 million in cap savings. So you can create about $16 million of space by cutting him. Doesn't matter pre or post June 1st because this is the actual last year of his deal. There's not even any void years after it. That's kind of the John Allen story from a contractual standpoint.
Yeah. This is a tough conversation to have because it's guys that have committed a lot and done a lot for the organization. I will say about the question, you know, like Daron Payne has produced at the exact same level throughout his career. And so what I would say to that is people are like, oh, he had 13 sacks 1 year. His pressure rate is like 9.1, almost on the dot.
I think, can I rephrase that for you?
Yeah,
though? Can I say he's played at the exact same level? He has not produced at the same level, because the 1 year that play level turned into a lot higher rate of production because he finished a ton of sacks.
Yeah, so he's been the same guy. So like when I hear fans get frustrated, it's because like he's not getting 13 sacks. I understand the frustration, but it's also like this is who he is. He's a good athlete, good physicality, good on first and second down, has some decent pass rush juice, not that top tier, S tier pass rusher, but he's a good defensive tackle. Now, I think the question becomes is like, is it worth what you're paying him? And I think with the way the tackle market's going, it's actually like kind of becoming like a kind of not a middle of the road deal, but kind of upper middle class kind of deal for defensive tackle, because everyone's getting paid a lot of money. So I don't know. I think you probably, we'll see. I would defer to Adam on all this stuff, obviously.
Of course.
But so if I'm talking about Daron specifically, I would talk to the coaches and be like, hey, like, where do you see him? Like, what's his role? Like, how do you feel about him as a player? I'm sure that they like him. I'm sure that because again, when you watch the film, like, does he have ups and downs? Yes, every player does. But does he still have flashes? Can he still set a double team at times? Yes. Can he be disruptive? Yes, 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 yes. All those things. I think the number associated with him has a lot of fans expecting something different. But like, this is who he is. And he's been pretty consistent with it his entire career, right? John is a different story to me. Like that becomes a little bit different because there's no tie to it, really, right? They didn't draft him. They didn't bring him in. It's a big cap hit if they do keep him for the season. So that becomes a little bit more interesting. A restructure, like let's say John is willing to come back at like, I don't know, $8 million a year on a restructure, or $9 million a year, $10 million a year on a restructure. You're probably going to kick the tires on that and see how he feels about it. I don't know if John would want that. That's the thing. Like, I don't know if that because he views himself as a $20 million a year type guy. But is he still that? I don't know. Does this organization view him that way? And these are some of the hard decisions you got to make. So to me, I think that's why it becomes so easy to have the conversation about John and cutting him, is because the money is so favorable for the cut, like right now. Like, you're saving so much money. Think about, what did you say, 16.5? Is that what you said?
Yeah, 16.4, yeah.
That's three players, if you want, right? That's three players, role players in an offense or a defense that can make you a better football team, and that's tied up with him. So is he worth three players right now at this point in his career? And again, I'm not opposed to a restructure. I'm not. Like, he still does some stuff as a defensive player that is very, very good, but I don't think he's worth that $20 million number anymore. And again, like, the staff might feel differently, and I would defer to them on this. But that's something that, again, because of how the contracts are worked at the moment, I think you probably end up keeping Daron, right? Because, again, you have so much guarantee to tied up with it. And then John feels like a more natural one. And again, they might feel like we can restructure this, and John wants to stay. John wants to retire commander, all those different things. But as of right now, just based on deal structure, I'm kind of like, it feels easier to move on from John.
And the way a restructure would work is John would get more money, but less per year. And that way it works for both sides. So let's say his base this year is 15.5. Let's say they say, hey, man, we'll offer you 2 for $20. So you're going to definitely get $20 million guaranteed.
Right.
But it's over 2 years. Now your cap hit is $10 million. And that's a very oversimplified deal. Because that's like no signing bonus, whatever. But like that's the kind of way that it would work to do that. The other thing is like, I don't know if there's not an easy way to say this, but like, I don't know how much John fits in what they want to do. Like, not just because John's been a leader in everything, but I think it just might, here's the way I'll say it. I think it might be time for a fresh start for everybody in that relationship. I think that there was some stuff that happened in the acclimation process, whatever. I don't have it on good enough everything to like go too deep into it, but I definitely think that there were times last year where there was some push and pull with how they wanted to do things, and you know, John was an incumbent, and that's something that I think bubbled out into the press and whatever at times. There's other people that have talked about this a little bit more that might have a little bit more detail and reporting on it, but I think, you know, John's given a lot to this organization. He's from here. It's a great story, the whole deal. I just think it might be time to hit the eject button and start fresh, and it makes sense financially to do that. So the idea of extending him and bringing him more, especially like, hey, here's a guy who still views himself up here, and we're going to ask him down here. And even if he accepts it, like, how happy is he going to be about that? I don't know that I want that kind of friction in my building either. So it might be best to just be like, hey, man, thanks for everything. We might retire your number one day. I don't know if John actually got to that point, but like, you can tell him that on the way out, make him feel good. We'll welcome you back for alumni events. That's for sure. Yeah. And that's that. So, you know, Deron, I think, is one to watch, obviously, in a trade if the Myles Garrett thing comes about. But at the end of the day, I think Deron's going to be here for one more year. And then we're having the same discussion about Deron next year because he'll be entering the final year of his deal. And the math will math in a way that makes a lot of sense to move on from him. And then for John, I just think this is the end of the road for all of the reasons.
Yeah. And, you know, I as a former player, I have a really hard time talking about money for players because I'm always like, I always want players to make as much money as possible. And I don't want guys to get cut. This is a funny situation, though, right? Because it's like this is one of those things where it's like Father Time waits for no man. And speaking from experience, like as a player, you don't know that you're like done. You never know. Like, you always think you've still got more in the tank. You still think you're the best player, your best version of yourself. But you know that's not true. It's like you don't know it's true until you look back on it and reflect. So right. I think that's why these conversations, I mean, this probably sounds a little awkward between this dialogue right now. But it's, yeah. I hate it too, to be clear.
I want John to make
$20 million this year. I want him to make that. But is it the right situation here for him and for the team? I'm not sure. Same thing with Deron, man. Like, I think Deron is a good football player, and we can talk about value, absolute value of the contract, all those things. But ultimately, like, the team paid him a contract. He's getting paid that money, and I'm happy for him. And I think that's where it's weird to have these conversations, because like, I don't want to be messing with someone's livelihood, right? Like,
totally.
That's the thing that's weird.
And like, even talking about like, hey, well, trade Deron for Myles Garrett. Yeah, no brainer. It's like, that's a human being. Like, the way we commoditize players and treat them as commodities is, unfortunately, it's just a part of the job. Like, we have to do it because that's how the market works. And at least in the NFL, like, hey, sorry, Deron, you're going to have to go live in Cleveland. You're a Brown now, but you're making $20 million a year. Like, there's only so much you're going to cry for a guy who's making that much money. That's generational type money, as opposed to some other leagues that are lower down the scale, where, like, look, the NWSL, the National Women's Soccer League, has banned trades without player consent, which I think is great, especially. That was part of their previous CBA, but like, they don't make enough money to just be shipped across the country. Right. Like, that's insane at the salaries that they're making compared to what NFL guys or NBA guys are making. It's a lot easier to have those discussions when at least you know that they're not only are they going to be fine, but like, their family is going to be fine for generations off of the money they made. But that said, like, they're still human beings, and we owe them that humanity to just not be like, yeah, just cut him. Yeah, whatever happens to him, I don't care. So it's not that. It's just like the reality of the business and talking about it in that way. But I think it's good for us to acknowledge that every so often, if not every time that we talk about it. Okay, that's our show for today. Next show, mock draft. We'll take a look at who might be on the board for the Commanders at 29. And we'll also take a look at what trades might be worth making leading up to 29. That'll come out on Thursday morning. And then next week, we'll talk to you from Indianapolis at the NFL Scouting Combine. For Logan, I'm Craig. We'll see you next time on Take Command. All right, that is from Take Command, the full podcast with a really great offensive line question and a how does Jaden Daniels avoid a CJ Stroud-esque sophomore slump question. It is available now in your feeds. Coming up next here on the Hoffman Show, is there any way the NBA could pull off a one-on-one tournament at All-Star Weekend? But first, the latest on the world of women's sports presented by Wawa, chicken how you want it at Wawa with customizable crispy and roasted chicken sandwiches.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code STYLE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code STYLE. Enjoy!
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube, but I need to turn my light down, Anthony. It gets to a point in the day where it's dark enough outside behind me where I'm like, whoa, that's a lot of contrast. I'm being blinded. Now, I don't know. I feel like I look ghastly and ghostly right now. What if I just take that light down? Or wait, does the light need to be over here now? What's happening? How do I look beautiful, Anthony? I'm really struggling here today. Maybe it's just not meant to be.
Yeah, maybe you just don't need it.
All right, show's over. See ya.
Where are you going, sir?
I don't know. If I put it here, it's ghost story time.
Mm-hmm.
Once upon a time in the National Basketball Association, players made less money and they were willing to do more stuff. Now, they're not. Do you think we could ever get a one-on-one tournament the way that we just saw in Unrivaled?
I mean, based on what some of the NBA players were saying over the weekend, it's like this is what I'll say. It sounds good. I think when you're in the moment, you ask people, you put them on the spot. Yo, what do you think of this? Yo,
they don't want to be the loser that says no. Well, then what happens when the contract's sitting in front of you or the offer?
Exactly. I mean, that's why I say it sounds good.
They all say no.
Just don't believe it, though.
Rachel Nichols, of course, does the show here for Monumental Sports, a longtime ESPN anchor, now works for Showtime Basketball. She asked players about this.
What do you think about the idea of doing a ones tournament here?
I mean, it'd be fire.
Would you put yourself on the line and compete in a one-on-one tournament?
Hell yeah.
Would you be interested in that at all? Would you actually compete in it?
Yeah, for sure. If I had the chance to play one-on-one with anybody, I would love to do it.
I'm open to it.
Yeah?
Yeah, when there's smoke, there's fire. That's in that fire in one-on-one.
The women have been racking it with the one-on-ones and the Unrivaled. Do you guys see a one-on-one tournament at All-Star sometime soon? Are you guys going to man up now that the women have showed you the way?
They definitely paved the way. It was fire, too. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I think it'd be dope. Do I think we do it? I don't know.
Y'all too embarrassed? What's going on?
I don't know. I can't speak for everybody.
I don't think anybody's embarrassed. I just think that there has to be an appreciation there first of what you do. Because you got to commentate a little bit differently than you do 5-on-5. Yeah. There's an appreciation for seeing a 1v1 matchup that I think goes beyond just what the traditional space is now. So maybe if we create that, I'm with that.
It'd be fun.
All right.
I would love to do it.
There you go. Okay. I like it. You would love to do it. Mm-hmm. All right. James Harden says he's in. Kyrie says he's in. Mm-hmm. I'm gathering guys. We're going to have it.
Anytime you could do something like that, put something on the line, I think, you know, all the true competitors would be open to doing it.
Of the players in this year's All-Star game on all the teams, who do you think would win a one-on-one tournament?
Who do I think would win? Yeah. Including myself?
Including yourself.
Me.
It don't matter. I'm winning.
Come on. Really?
I'm winning. It don't matter. You got, you know, Kai and Katie and Steph, and I mean, you can keep going on and on. Somebody like Brian, people are gonna watch it. You gotta bring your A game, you gotta bring your moves out. So I think people will love that.
All right, can we get it going maybe for next year?
Let's get it.
All right, you said it.
Put me down.
Okay, how many different guys are in that video? We got Harden. I believe James Harden would do it. I also think James Harden is an incredible one on one player and would thrive in that environment. I think Kyrie would do it.
I think so.
I think Giannis would do it. Donovan Mitchell was like, he was the one who was like, the lady's been killing it. I don't know that we can do it. I feel like Donovan would do it, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Who else is in that video?
Anthony Edwards.
Anthony Edwards 100% would do it.
I think it was just those five.
Who was the guy who was talking about if we can create the environment? About the commentary 5-on-5 versus 1-on-1?
I think Donovan Mitchell.
That was Donovan?
Yeah. Because he was the one that was comparing the women's game and, you know,
the appreciation for it?
Yeah, the appreciation for it.
For the 1-on-1 versus, okay.
Yeah.
I think those guys would do it. Nikola Jokic is not playing 1-on-1. Unless it's like polo and he can do it on horses.
Do you think, though, they would separate bigs from guards, though?
They didn't. That was part of the beauty of the Unrivaled tournament, was everyone thought the guards were going to dominate, and then Aliyah Edwards went out there and smacked them.
Yeah, so is it fair, though?
I mean, what's Giannis? Is he a big or a guard?
He's a big. You got to go play with the bigs, bro. You're 6'11".
I mean, maybe you do a bigs bracket and a guards bracket, and the winner faces off.
Yeah.
Now we got an idea. Now not only have we made it about personal pride, we've done it on positional pride.
Yep.
Who's actually the better one-on-one player, the bigs or the guards?
Real moves.
Yeah. So maybe Jokic would do that. LeBron's not doing it.
No, he's not.
I mean,
when they name dropped him, I said, yeah, he's not doing it.
LeBron, maybe if it was truly his last year and he didn't care anymore, but this was LeBron in 2009. Talking about doing the All-Star or doing the dunk contest in 2010.
In 2010, in Dallas Stadium.
That's right.
Primarily, I put my name in the dunk contest.
All right, fans, you heard that from LeBron James. And the winner tonight, square off in Dallas for the slam dunk competition.
He has arrived.
Uh-huh.
That's right. We got Obama as president. We finally got LeBron James in the dunk contest.
Okay.
I don't know what Reggie Miller brought Barack Obama being president up for, but Anthony, as the resident LeBron James expert and super fan, did LeBron James compete in 2010 at the NBA's slam dunk contest?
Sadly, he did not.
No, he didn't. No. And in fact, he never has.
No, never.
And part of it is ego, where somewhere, and LeBron is like, I think, actually the most responsible for this in terms of the dunk contest. Like Jordan did it, Kobe did it. All the great dunkers, you know, Vince Carter obviously did it. from the Vince Carter level all-star young player to the Kobe and MJ young players, those guys all did it until LeBron. And post-LeBron, how many of them have done it? Like, Zach LaVine was like a phenom type player, but I don't think, I think people looked at him as more of a dunker than like, oh, this dude's going to be a multiple time all-star player. You know, LaVine did make, I think, a couple of all-star teams, but ultimately, like, he's not that caliber. Dwight Howard kind of gets credit for doing it.
Yep.
Dwight Howard, who is going to the Hall of Fame soon.
Blake.
Blake is 100% the exception. People forget how, like, Blake Griffin was a top five player for a long time in the league. Yep. He was incredible. And then it fell off. But, you know, Anthony Edwards hasn't done it.
Zion Williamson
didn't do it. Ja hasn't done it.
Nope.
You know, these guys that are the peak players have not done it. I do respect Anthony Edwards at least was like, it's because I would be bad at it. He at least was like, I don't have any tricks. All I do is power. So I, if he's like, if there's a contest where we can dunk on people, I'm in. Hey, I appreciate that honesty because someone like Ja has been an incredible in-game dunker with tricks, with spins, with the whole deal. Like, Ja didn't have an excuse not to do it other than he just hasn't. You know, I think a younger Anthony Edwards before he busted up to this level, I think they probably could have convinced him to do it. But I don't know, man. Like, it's just whether it's the dunk contest or getting back to our original point of the one-on-one, I just don't think enough guys would be willing to put their pride on the line. And also, I think the incentives are so different. And I hate to make it about the money, but like, these dudes are mini corporations. They can't get hurt playing one-on-one. Yeah. They can't get hurt in the dunk contest. They're not jumping over a car. It's too risky.
Yeah.
And unlike in, because like for Nafisa Collier, let me look up Fee's contract real quick with the Lynx. Nafisa Collier Lynx contract.
She's getting like 100K.
Fee is a max player. She signed a 3-year, $552,000 contract in 2022. That's $184,000 per year, average. She just made 200K winning the one-on-one tournament.
That's half her salary almost.
No. She made 200K. She made more than her salary.
Oh, yeah, because it's 100. Yeah, I'm tripping.
Yeah. 182 is her salary. God, 200 dang. Is what she made. You can't fake that kind of desperation. Anthony, if I told you tomorrow we could get 120% of our yearly salary, 110% of our yearly salary, if we did the best radio show possible, do you realize how many stones? Like, we do, we work hard on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, we don't work, earn our entire yearly salary in one day hard on this show.
Yeah.
The level of locked in, the aggressiveness we would have with different guests, like, it would be a very different show if we literally put all our eggs in one basket. But that's not our job. We have to put on a good show 5 days in a row.
Yeah.
And then we get 2 days off and then we do it again. Like, that's a different thing. But if do you realize Damian Lillard's making $60 million? What are you going to do? Offer an $80 million prize? Hell no.
Yeah.
So you just can't fake that level of desperation. And that's ultimately the thing, right? Is like you cannot fake that level or create that level of urgency financially. And because of that, I don't know if this would ever be the same quality that Unrivaled was, even if the NBA did ultimately get to pull something off and go, hey, we got it. We're going to play one-on-one. I don't know the guys would go as hard as these ladies did down in Miami. So like, could it happen? Sure. Would we credit Unrivaled for unlocking it? I think yes. Would it probably be as good as the Unrivaled tournament? The first year, maybe, but not year over year because they can't possibly offer the same financial incentive, which is unfortunately the number one motivator for most people.
Yeah, the financial thing is definitely huge. But I think when it comes to like the one-on-one, I think if they just had like some kind of, you know, incentive where you get to be called, I don't know.
King of the court?
King of the court. Yeah, something. Like, you got to find a way to encourage these guys, motivate these guys to, like, really want to participate in it. And I don't know. I think holding the king of the court best one-on-one player accolade, it's something.
It should be enough.
Yeah.
And like, you know, we had the caller earlier, Greg, who was like, these guys are prima donnas. They make too much money. And to me, like, it should be a part of the deal. Like, part of the reason, like, you have to understand part of the reason you make all this money. Yes. If you are, let's say, I'm trying to put Wizards fans in this. Not that, I don't know if there's more Wizards fans or Lakers fans or whatever listening. But, like, let's say the Wizards draft Cooper Flagg. And 3 years from now, they're really good. And then they're playing one-on-one and Cooper Flagg gets hurt playing one-on-one. Our Wizards fans are going to be rightfully pissed.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that is the other question, which is part of the reason why, like, I kind of respect what the NFL did, where they're like, all right, this game isn't worth saving. Like, this thing, like, we'll find a way to name the team and have some fun, but they do it after the season and whatever else. I just think that if guys are good, if the main reason guys don't want to do it is pride or ego, maybe that's worth fighting against that battle. But I also think there's a reality that the way we talk about basketball specifically is so championship driven that if there's anything that could undercut a guy winning a title, he's one of those players, like the LeBrons, who are measured solely based off of how he's doing versus the ghost of Michael Jordan. I realize MJ's still alive. I mean, the playing ghost of Michael Jordan. Then I don't think those guys are going to play. I think that's just a reality of it. All right, that's that. We're running out of show. So, Anthony, we have time for some real things real people said in real microphones?
We got time for the one that's in the folder.
Excellent. Let's do it.
Real things.
We're not going to be sucked this year.
Real people.
5-11. Not very good.
Said into real microphones.
You know, the culture is actually damn good.
Speaking of All-Star Weekend, there was some good stuff that came out of it, such as Nikola Jokic not being able to believe that Victor Wembanyama brought a book to the All-Star game.
You would have brought a book?
Yeah. I read before every game. Is that this crazy? So like I brought...
Victor Wembanyama. We didn't know. He's the NBA's A.J. Brown.
And look, he likes reading, man.
Smart fella, that Victor Wembanyama. All right, that's our show. Terps Talk with Kevin Willard is next. We'll see you tomorrow on the Team 980.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, football,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.